You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to episode 128 of Atheistically Speaking with your host Thomas Smith. Well, we've got part two with the Jehovah's Witnesses, and this time we're going to pick up with Harley's story and a little catch up. So without further ado, let's get to that. Let's go over to Harley. Thanks for patiently waiting.
That's okay.
How are things going? I remember
Counselor Thomas.
How are you feeling today? The sort of pseudo cliffhanger of last time, I think, definitely involved your sister, and you know whether or not things would come to a head with her. Sure. Medical condition. Is anything changed on that?
Nothing's changed on that, other than her age.
she's not the same age? Wow.
No, she's not the same
Man,
age
I feel like I hardly her. Know her anymore.
Right. No, she became 18, and around about her 18th birthday, I just thought, you know what, this is, you know, she's an adult now, so it's probably time for us to have a chat, quite honestly, to one another. So,
well, I remember you were worried though because you didn't want to get, you know, kicked out of the house. Yep. So
yeah, exactly. So I wasn't forceful at all. I just asked her how she felt, what she wanted to do, how she wanted me to act, etc. And she essentially said that she believed it all and wanted me to not worry about it. And she kind of made the decision for no blood, which I guess she's entitled to make. Now, I think, even though I still don't agree with her and I don't know what I'd do in the moment, but as of right now, I guess I'm kind of letting her make her own choices.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's tough though.
I wanted to ask that question because I honestly, I've been very curious to see how things are going, but perhaps we should reset a little bit just in case people haven't heard the original episodes.
Okay.
Go ahead if you don't mind. I can poke and prod with some questions too.
Okay. Well, she is still a Jehovah's Witness, and they don't allow blood transfusions. That's one of the big things, that people often know about witnesses. And she also has, a blood disorder where she doesn't, generate white blood cells, or the clotting agent particularly well. So essentially, if she was to get heavy bleeding, they wouldn't have too many options as to making it stop. So obviously, there's a big chance if she has an accident or for whatever reason starts to lose a lot of blood, unless there's a thing called a cell salvage machine in the hospital that she ends up going to, she'd probably die. So,
and as a reset, your basic story, if you don't mind, the high level, just so for the people who have heard it, hopefully we don't, you know, I don't want to be too repetitive, but for the people who haven't, give a good,
just go back and listen to the episode. I'm in England, grew up, as a Jehovah's Witness. All my family was Jehovah's Witness. I came across some things that, just all of a sudden didn't make sense for me. A lot to do with sacrifice of animals, and I kind of thought it was cruel, and then that made me start questioning things. Read the Noah's Ark account again. Didn't believe any of that.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? Essentially, it was the rainbow bit that did it at the end of the story. That the reason that there's rainbows is God's promise.
Yeah,
that he wouldn't flood the earth again, and I just had the thought of, actually, that just sounds like people trying to explain things that they didn't understand.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the penny drop moment for me. And then it all started to look like crap. So essentially I left, but I didn't leave my home because I was worried about getting, or being disfellowshipped, meaning that no one would be able to talk to me again, any of my friends, any of my family.
Yeah, as compared to Kenny, it sounded like the stakes were a little higher. Also, all the while you're living at home, and I remember just it just seemed like such a tough situation, and probably still is. You're living at home. You were kind of treading, walking on eggshells, right, as regards the religion, and all the while your sister has this blood disease, and you're very worried that they would, your parents would just let her die if something happened. And so that was very tough. And I remember, you also saying you weren't sure what you were going to do, but you wanted to kind of reach out to her and talk to her about it. And it sounds like you did, and she wasn't really having it. For now, you're just
praying,
Yeah. So I just wanted to ask all our listeners to please pray that Harley's sister realizes prayer does nothing.
Yeah, sure.
Man, that is so rough. So is she going to school?
She is, yeah. She did A-levels, which I think she's just at the end of now. She did really well. She did biology, so.
Yeah, that's hopefully. Right, because she wasn't she interested in medicine, or do I have that wrong?
Medicine
or
I'm
something.
Not sure
I thought it was biology or something related to that.
Yeah, she really excelled at biology and art.
Does she have any college plans immediately, or is she still mulling that over?
Not right now.
Okay,
but I'm pretty sure she will, because she is fairly exceptional intellectually. To be honest, she's really really smart. So I'd be surprised if she was to just go to an English college or tech school. I wouldn't be surprised if she did go to university.
Man, hopefully
great,
she does study biology and get something.
Yeah, she can have a story similar to Kenny's, hopefully one day.
That would be nice. Yeah. Wow. Well, so that's a tough update, man. I'm sorry to hear that. I just hope nothing happens. Like, is she still in good health as of now? And
she's in good health. Yeah, she's doing fine.
Well, that's good to hear. At least I'm just so worried. I don't want it would be very tragic for such a ridiculous faith, really, to cost a life would be awful.
And it wouldn't be the first.
Jehovah's Witnesses must look at. Do they? What if they find out someone they are speaking to had a blood transfusion? I mean, do they think like, oh, you're a soulless? What do they think? I mean. Does that just not pop up?
if someone they were talking to had a blood transfusion, they'd completely understand the way they understand that people fornicate or, whatever else would be.
But is that just cognitive dissonance? Because if the belief really is, and maybe I have the belief wrong, but isn't it that, your soul or you're kind of losing who you are if you have a blood transfusion, or do I have that wrong?
It's more that blood is seen as sacred.
Yeah. Well, it's still, maybe I'm just doing some math that they're not doing, but it would seem to me if I had that belief that, and then someone got a blood transfusion, I would think, this person, something's wrong with them. They're not sacred anymore. And they're not, they're not whole anymore. It's just weird. Am I crazy? Is that not how
Can
anyone
you speak
feels?
Like me?
And what's that?
No, I was just wondering if Kenny could speak to that.
Yeah.
What he thought.
I haven't had any personal experience with it, but my understanding, as Harley was saying, is that it's more symbolic, although they do try to wrestle with the physical technicality of it, right? That you can get different other types of solutions injected into you, or saline solution, the kind of thing, to help you in the times that you would need a blood transfusion instead of getting the actual blood. So they're looking for the letter of the law that they can get around it while trying to still stick to the spirit of the law. But it is mostly a symbolic thing.
Well, but if we're talking about people in Harley's case, he said he was virtually certain that his parents would let his sister die before getting a blood transfusion. I mean, it's amazing to me that that's just it's just a symbolic thing for them. I mean, I understand maybe for other people it might be, but that's pretty serious. Yet, am I wrong here? It's amazing that you could hold that strong of a belief to where you're willing to let someone die, yet you wouldn't think less of someone else who had a blood transfusion.
Jehovah's Witnesses, as a general rule, are pretty hardcore. They are pretty devout. They're generally really sincere in their beliefs, so it doesn't shock me.
Well, but then shouldn't that go both ways? I mean, shouldn't they look at people who have had a blood transfusion as somehow less than human or something?
Well, you see, they weren't yet in the truth. They didn't understand their actions yet.
But if they were in the truth, would they get disfellowshipped for that?
I don't know.
Probably reproved.
Reproved?
Which is the punishment sort of within. You have all your privileges taken away from you and
well, that sounds worth life.
I mean, I think that's it.
To me, I mean,
I think what it is more about is the relationship with Jehovah or God, because if you were to have a blood transfusion, you and doing it deliberately, you would feel very rebellious. You'd feel like you'd let God down, and when the promise is, if you die now, you'll get resurrected to eternal life in paradise. Dying doesn't seem like such a bad thing for it. Actually, seems like a shortcut in those situations, a free pass, if you will, for a lot of them.
Yeah, they would no longer have to suffer through this, you know, terrible system of things as they describe it.
Right, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or something. if they're into Shakespeare, yeah,
they're not.
that's funny. I mean, that is really critical though. I mean, I know there's varying degrees of, and there's a lot of wiggle room of how much does religion really affect people and affect their decisions and underwrite their decisions and all that. But fundamentally, if you believe that if you die, it's fine, you're going somewhere immediately that's better than here, that's got to have a big effect on your outlook and decisions you would make and maybe how you would vote, you know, like
they don't vote.
Well, I was speaking in general about religion, but,
sorry.
Well, because I've talked a lot about this on the show about, you know, there's a lot of debate about terrorism, for example. I mean, how religion versus political, and obviously there's a lot of wiggle room, but still, I do think fundamentally, if you think you're going somewhere better after you die, that it really changes how you act. I would think, or you're just, I guess you don't really believe it. But if you really did, then what do you guys think on that?
Well, as a little kid, I actually had a moment like in this kind of idea where someone in our congregation died, and we had a funeral, like people do, and everybody was crying. And as a little kid, I was really, really confused by this because, as I said, I was devout. I believed. And so from my perspective, I was thinking, okay, well, he was in pain before he died. He's not experiencing anything at the moment. And the next thing that he's going to know is being resurrected into a paradise garden of Eden. So that sounds pretty good for him because he's not in pain anymore, and the next thing he's going to know is awesome. So why are we all sad? And – or why is everybody sad? And I – as a little kid, I actually kind of thought to myself, like, do they not really believe? Is that what's going on here?
You know,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't – I really didn't understand it as a kid.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. It's one of those from the mouths of babes thing. That happens a lot in religion. Mm-hmm. Kenny, I know now that you've been active and speaking about the harms of religion, what are some of the elements of that you've cared about recently that have been under your attention?
The parts that I talk about a lot are often the like discrimination against gay people and women and that kind of a thing. One of the things that I try when talking about Jehovah's Witnesses, one of the things I try to get people to understand is that Jehovah's Witnesses are a doomsday cult. Yeah. People don't really understand because they just think of witnesses as knocking on the doors. But from the very beginning of the religion, you know, 100+ years ago, it's always been focused on Armageddon. And, you know, Armageddon is right around the corner. You know, they keep saying that it's just a couple of years away, months away, You know, over and over and over again, they keep saying this. You know, in 1938, they said it was months away.
And how right they were. I can't believe we all got through – our grandparents all got through that. It was very harrowing. But
Those are kind of the big things, is that I try to get people to understand that, you know, they seem nice from the outside, but they're not. Like if you cross them, they will turn on you in a heartbeat, which is kind of one of the reasons why, you know, Harley has to step gently, right? So I try to let people understand what it's really like in their religion.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything to add to that, Harley?
Not really. Kenny, do you know how many times you might have seen it on your blog, it might have been another one, that they've made predictions of specific times where Armageddon was supposed to come before they changed to the, well, we're never going to know attitude that they currently have.
Okay, well, let's see. It was originally said in 1925 that was the big one where they said millions now living will never die because they expected Armageddon to come by 1927 or so. And then in 38 is when they said it was just months away. In 1950 or 51, they changed it to saying that Armageddon was going to come within the lifetime of the quote-unquote anointed that were alive in 1914. And the anointed are the special people who will go to heaven after Armageddon, as opposed to Jehovah's Witnesses believe that the majority of people will stay on Earth and Earth will be turned back into the Garden of Eden.
Oh, that's right, Harley. You mentioned last time, right? There's a very fixed number that get to go to heaven, right? Yeah, so it wasn't like 200 something thousand, or do I have, maybe I'm off on my number.
It's 144,000.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Wonder. Okay. Yeah. It was the 12 stuff in Revelation. Or yeah.
Right. Yeah. 12 and 12.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Very curious.
And then like in the 60s, they said that it was going to happen in 1975, and then it didn't happen in 1975 again, like all the other times. And there was a huge schism and like they lost a bunch of the population like that left Jehovah's Witnesses. And then they changed it again so that it wasn't just that the anointed generation would still be alive. They said it would be anybody who was alive in 1914 would still be alive when Armageddon happened. And then in the 90s, they stopped talking about 1914.
Well, because the because the movie Armageddon came out, right?
Obviously.
Yeah.
And then
did any of their predictions coincide with that? And like 1960, they're like, someone named Bruce Willis is going to be that
it's
actually
a terrible movie.
I'd be a believer, maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
They stopped talking about it because they just couldn't get the Google hits anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, we need to figure out this SEO stuff. I don't know. Something else is taking all our hits.
Yeah, and just a couple of years ago, they changed it again. I'm going to say like 2010. They changed it again so that the generation, the 1914 generation that will never pass away, is actually this overlapping generations BS where it's anyone who was alive during the lifetime of anyone who was alive in 1914, etc. Basically trying to buy themselves another 80 years or so.
I was going to say they really should have just nipped this in the bud and just – as soon as the first one didn't go right, they should have been like, let's just come up with an excuse that works forever. Because this is, you know, if we keep making excuses over and over, it's going to be less believable. But I guess they didn't have that foresight.
They need to keep the urgency up.
And I think it speaks to the fact that they really do believe it.
Yeah.
That I don't think that they're – because they say a lot of things that if you were aware of the fact that you were – lying to people, you wouldn't do, right? You would cover your butt to make sure that you don't get caught.
Yeah.
And one of the other things is that they are constantly discouraging people from having kids, which is not something that you would expect from a group that is intending to try to grow, right?
Yeah, it's not the usual way that religion survives, that's for sure.
I didn't have that experience, to be honest.
Oh, really?
No. I don't know if that's just Was that governing body stuff or just your local congregation?
No, that was governing body stuff. I have a post on my blog that kind of goes through it throughout time. Like back in the 30s, like when they were saying it was months away, they were telling people,
sure, you know,
don't have kids because they're just going to be a burden during Armageddon. And
yeah, you got to carry them around.
In the 70s, when they were saying it was going to be, you know, 1975, there was like an article in the Watchtower that said, you know, we're hearing reports of brothers and sisters who are putting off having children, and they're selling their homes and they're quitting their jobs and spending all of their time out in service, knocking on doors, you know, preaching the word. And isn't that a fine way to spend these remaining years, you know, before Armageddon? And one of my brothers, he told me that when he first got married, and he was discussing with his wife, also a witness, you know, because you have to do it that way, whether or not they wanted to have kids. They wanted to, but they were just not sure if they should, because again, this, you know, it was going to be a burden before Armageddon. And it's a good thing they did, right? Because
yeah,
their kids are now having kids. Like his son, my nephew, is now, like, his wife is expecting, right? So,
yeah, and Armageddon didn't happen by my memory.
I may have missed it.
Yeah,
there's a couple of years I don't remember, but
yeah, I might have been taking a nap, but yeah.
So yeah, it's been a pretty long standing global thing.
I think in a perfect world, I know laws like this aren't realistic, but in my world, if I were president, I want to make a law that says if you ever make an Armageddon prediction of any kind, once the date passes, you still have to predict that date. Like you can't, like you just, I was thinking about this the other day. Like if you're, you know, who is the guy, what's that guy's name?
Harold Camping?
That's it. Harold Camping should be required. Wait, did he die? I can't remember. Was he the one who died? Somebody, I don't know. I can't keep track of these nut jobs. Harold Camping should constantly have to keep saying that date, like whatever, 2012. Like it's going to come just all the time. He should be required by the state, should require him to make that speech every month or so. Like, mark my words, guys, my time. If it doesn't come on October 2012, then I am totally wrong, but you'll see. And it just forever until he dies. So make Armageddon predictions at your own peril, everyone, just under my regime.
That's right.
Man, I was going to ask, anything else that springs to mind that you guys want to try to enlighten my listening audience to about Jehovah's Witnesses, let me know. But it turns out I work with, I think, two Jehovah's Witnesses. And
unlucky.
It's, to be honest, it's a little frustrating because they can't – any sort of celebration of any kind in the office, they can't take part in. The minute there's – even if there's a meeting that turns into like, by the way, you know, it's about something else. The meeting's about something else. But by the way, congratulations to such and such for something or whatever. You know, like they have to leave. Yet I learned the other day that one of them is really into – like video games and so I know there's no direct contradiction there, but when I heard that, like, I pictured this guy, okay, he's really into his religion. He has to leave whenever anyone's talking of celebrating anyone. So I picture, like, for some reason that makes me picture someone out of time, you know, someone a little older, way back, you know, they're not worried about current, you know, modern trappings. And then for some reason, when I heard he's like super into this video game, just like, how does he reconcile those two things? Like these, it's so weird to me. It's like someone could be so cognitively dissonant that, you know, the people who make these video games, they're a bunch of non-believers, and it's just weird how that works. I think if you're really into it to where you can't participate in a work meeting, you know, you should just be praying all the time. Like if you're that into it. I don't know.
If the instruction wasn't so strong about not celebrating birthdays, which is the one I guess you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. But anything, he stretches it to anything. Like if there's any sort of like, celebration of something, you know,
he just doesn't like.
I know. Could be.
Oh, I'm not really, it's my religion. I got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, my religion totally says that I can't be here for this meeting.
Yeah, well, mine says that I should be getting paid more. How does it, can I do that? Is that, my religion says up my salary right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember that video games were looked down upon when I was young and still in, but that was also like, you know, I had an Atari growing up, and you know, I had a first generation Nintendo, and at the time, you know, like the Legend of Zelda, they weren't so sure about that. You know,
let's talk about. So sure about
that. He has a cross on his shield, you know, and like, he's using potions. What is this? You know.
So. Oh, man. Yeah, those potions are actually mini blood transfusions that he drinks.
Right? They're even little hearts. He's picking up hearts.
Yeah. That's okay, the rest of this podcast will be dedicated to The Legend of Zelda NES, because that is one of my favorite games of all time.
I could genuinely do that as well.
Oh, I love it. I put together my old NES. You didn't get
to play it, guys. That's so mean.
You didn't get to play it? Oh, man.
Of course not. It was of the devil.
I thought you had said they weren't sure about it. Okay.
Well... Yeah, they're saying they weren't sure about it, and then they look at you sternly, and if you don't go, oh yeah, that's I shouldn't be doing that, then they, you know, they keep looking at you until you agree, right?
Well, so, I've got very good news for you, Kenny. You can buy an NES still, and buy there's still time.
I have thought about it actually.
Oh man, I love it. Yeah, well, and then on the other hand, now that I think about it, maybe he is epitomizing his religion, my work. Fellow here, because he's like, well, the world's gonna end, like, what, you know, there's nothing else to do. maybe I just need to play video games. I mean, what am I, the world's ending, who cares? I mean, let me at least play a video game for a bit. So maybe I have it wrong. Maybe that is a very Jehovah's Witness thing to do.
It may also just be that video games at this point are integrated enough into our society. It's basically like watching TV.
Well, that's most definitely what it is. I was merely pondering the options, but yeah, I'm sure he just doesn't think about it. But it's I don't know. It is an interesting thing if you really do believe the world's ending. How you structure your life? It's curious.
It's a weird way to think. Yeah,
yeah.
The only other thing that I would mention is the thing that I've kind of joked about a couple of times about the truth. Right, that the reason why I think the witnesses are so devout and will stick to their guns so hard on these things is because of even the way that they describe it within, right? When you meet a new witness, you don't ask them, how long have you been a Jehovah's Witness? You ask them, how long have you been in the truth?
Yeah.
Right? That's how they refer to it from within. And so with that kind of, you know, mental programming, it's hard to even begin to question the things, right? Because it's the truth, capital T.
So, right. Yeah.
It's absolutely true. You can't, like, even people, if they were to inwardly have doubts, they would almost never express them to you publicly, just pretty much for that reason. That even a conversation about it not being maybe potentially the truth, then you'd almost lose a friend over that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the defense mechanism for the religion itself.
Yeah.
And they will not only probably stop being your friend, but they will also tell the elders who will show up at your door saying, excuse me, brother, we need to have a talk.
I need to discuss this with you.
Yeah.
Can your wife please leave the room?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, because she's a woman and can't can't hear what's going on.
Private conversation.
Yeah.
Well, they need to isolate you to make sure you don't have a support structure.
Yeah.
Because the isolation is essential to being able to control you. Yeah. That's why.
You know what I didn't ask about, Kenny, is if you ever had to go door to door.
Oh, yeah. Tons. I did it all the time. I even auxiliary pioneered for one summer as a teenager. What that means is pioneering is essentially dedicating to go door to door a certain number of hours each month. Most people are, at least back then, were requested to do a minimum of 10 hours each month knocking on doors. And they actually have you kind of fill out a time card. I went on this day for this long, this day on this long, and they keep track of all these things. They do a lot of statistics. And then back then, pioneering was a a commitment to do 90 hours every month, and auxiliary was 60 hours every month. So one summer when I was in high school, I actually did auxiliary pioneering, and so I did 60 hours a month.
Wow. Yeah.
When miserable. I did, it was down to 50, so I had an extra 10 hours at the pub.
Kids these days.
Yeah.
I think it's dropped again, actually.
Jeez.
It might be down
to 35
now.
Yeah, well, yeah. You might want to jump back in the religion now, Kenny. It sounds like a good deal.
Right, it's easy now.
And that's very similar to the Mormons I spoke to. I mean, you guys didn't have to leave the country. I guess you didn't have to go on a mission, but right. Yeah,
you can do that.
Oh yeah. Oh really? Is it an official kind of? Is there a lot of support from the church, or is it you can do that mm-hmm. on your own?
Yeah, it's called special pioneering, and it's. It was 100 hours a month when I was in, but I think it's even that's dropped down to 90 hours now a month. And you get sent to a lot like the Mormons, actually. You get a calling after doing some training. They wouldn't call it a calling, but and then you learn the language and go off to the place you were designated, usually with your wife as a couple.
Oh, similar. That's interesting. So, yeah, the difference being Mormons can't go if they're married, I believe.
Yes.
Based on the episode, I learned a lot about Mormonism. I'm liking this series of learning a lot about different religions and how crazy they all are. No. Yes. Sometimes how crazy they are. Well, I've hit Mormonism, Scientology, and Jehovah's Witness. Again, there's no word for it.
That's the trifecta.
Yeah, that's
crazy trifecta.
Pretty crazy. Yeah.
So all of the American religions, is that what that is?
Oh, that's a good point. I guess so. Yeah. Even though, well, then how did you get to it, Harley? Come on. What are you doing?
The special pioneers, I guess.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. One more thing I was going to say. If you know a fair bit about evolution, when the witnesses come and knock on your door, which they inevitably will, talk to them about that. And tell them that it's true.
I like this. I like this. A tip to dealing with potential Jehovah's Witnesses. Let me know if that sparks anything for you, Kenny. So if you go into evolution, they'll back down.
They will have to because they're very wrong about it. And well, it's one of the very few things that they...
But do they have a bunch of lies they've memorized? You know, a bunch of...
Yes.
Okay. They'll be the usual irreducible complexity arguments and that sort of thing, but nothing that... Someone that knows anything about evolution, you know, wouldn't be able to deal with.
Yeah, if you know your stuff, you can take them apart pretty well on that. They still won't believe you.
Oh no.
But, yeah, all of the standard anti-evolution and young Earth creationism stuff that you hear today, they had printed in a book in the '80s. It was their manual, the creation book. They call
it's not worth reading.
I found a copy last year in a used bookstore that I was able to pick up for like a dollar, and I got it again and started reading through it, and it's frightening and hilarious.
How is your face and your palm?
Yeah, they hurt a lot.
Yeah, no, some of it is just the worst.
And wow. But it sounds good when you're reading it. Like it sounds reasonable while you're reading it, but when you actually sort of look up the references that they're saying, you know, this scientific journal said that evolution, you know, isn't true anymore, and it's like what the scientific journal said was, is evolution true? And then you flip the page and it says, yes, it's true. But they don't quote that part of it, right?
I hate when they print those, by the way. They do that. What was that, Matt? I can't remember. They do that. Is everything we know about evolution wrong now? And then the answer is no. But it's like, what are you, come on, clickbait. What are you doing?
Yeah. I think they've even got quotes from like Richard Dawkins and stuff in there in the 80s.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, dude, Richard Dawkins.
Yeah.
Because at the time I didn't know his name. And so it was just some random scientist's name, you know?
Yeah. And the other hypocrisy of that, of course, is referencing science when it says or appears to say something you agree with. Then it's like, here we go. Science said that, you know, evolution is true. But when the vast amount of science, you know, says it is true, they ignore that. That's no good. picking and choosing science you believe. That's a favorite tactic, especially of William Lane Craig. He always has, he refers to studies that somehow go with his point as just the truth. Like, he doesn't even question them. But then anyone who's going against his point, it's like, well, he's just a scientist and he's probably wrong on that theory.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One weird thing about the witnesses too is they are older creationists. So they're not, they don't think the earth is 6 to 10,000 years old. They do believe that it's billions of years old, which is strange when you try and add or take away evolution from that process.
And this is actually something that's changed since I was a witness back then. This has been adopted because they can't keep fighting it. When I was growing up, they believed that the Earth was 42,000 years old, which was that each of the 7 days in Genesis was a figurative day, and each day was actually 7,000 years. And the last day, the one that on which God rested, was 7,000 years.
Now?
Yeah, now. And so the 6,000 years that you usually hear from young Earth creationists is just about to end. We're right at the end of it. And then in the 1,000-year reign of Jesus that's talked about in Revelation, we'll begin at Armageddon. And then at the end of that 1,000 years, we'll have completed the 7,000 years of this day. And then God will take back over. So
so we're somewhere like 48,000 now or 47,000? Sounds like the math didn't quite line up there.
Doesn't.
Yeah, that's why they thought the
that's why they changed it.
That was the 1975 number. They thought that was when the 6,000 years ended.
That was before witnesses learned maths.
Yeah,
but as Harley said, they've changed it now so that they believe that the Earth is billions of years old and the universe is billions of years old, but that humans have only still existed for about 6,000.
Well, they're getting closer, I guess.
keep backing them into those gaps.
Yeah, exactly. Keep trying. Oh, man. All right. Any other thoughts before we close this one out?
I appreciate the time to come on and talk.
I appreciate you so much for coming on, both of you guys. Harley, continue. I wish you good luck continuing with this situation you're in. Still not optimal, sounds like, but...
No.
Best of luck going forward with that. And Kenny, sounds like you've really you were able to just divorce yourself of the religion, and you've had it a little easier, I think, than Harley. But
much
good job on that. And I'm really excited to check out your blog, liberalgeek.com, and find some of these articles you reference. They sound very interesting.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's a very good website.
Right, and then also, of course, you can find Harley at Secular Lad on Twitter. And you can find Kenny at Kenny Weiland. So follow them all up. Give us all a tweet and let us know your thoughts on the episode and the religion. So thank you guys very much.
Have a great day.
You too.
See you. Yeah.
Thanks again to Kenny and Harley for coming on. Really appreciate that. Okay, several things to say to close out the week. First off, I will be getting married. So when I next record, I'll be a married man. But I don't expect it to last that long, so it'll be a temporary thing. But for those few episodes, enjoy that. And then also, I just wanted to get out that message one more time about Minnesota Skeptics. If you are in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and you want to have a group of people who like-minded people who are critical thinkers who might want to criticize religion or criticize astrology or anything like that, you have a safe place to go do it and a place to go be among friends. So check out Minnesota Skeptics. Find them on Facebook or on Meetup. Just Google them. Please do it if you're in the area. Also, we have several new patrons this week. I want to remind people that I am getting married, and my goal that I did on the my goal reduction on the Patreon does expire on that fateful day during which I take the sacred vows. We had a few new patrons. Austin Parks, thank you very much for your patronage. Mike Komen and Daniel Duncan. I've seen Daniel around. I don't know. Daniel, you're a patron of T and the B? I don't know. I see you around all the time. So thanks for finally patronizing. And appreciate all the comments and stuff, Daniel. Thanks for pledging. And if you want to try to get that patron-only feed, unfortunately, if we don't meet the goal, I'll just up it back to the 250, and then someday we'll reach that goal. But that's okay. Either way, but if you want to get on that, if you're a current patron, you want to up your patronage, that would help. Or if you want to, you know, pledge $1 an episode, the cost of a couple cups of coffee a month for all the work, you know, come on. You enjoy it. All the hours. The bonus content. We got another bonus content with Jake. They keep getting better and better. That is exclusive. Those aren't going out to the general public. That is you could almost just not even listen to Atheistically Speaking and just listen to the bonus content with Jake, and it would be a very reasonable podcast. It would be, I think, as good as many podcasts out there, just the bonus content. So consider it. Get on to patreon.com/atheist and show your support. I want to thank Zimu Zinu, coolest name in town. Adrian Borschoff, second coolest name in town. Michael, Jonathan Moyer, Havard S., Jay Aldenwalt. Bangs Naughty Bits, of course, can't not thank Bangs. Jerry Ray Howell, Peter Skelton, Brian Gerfort, Dale, Matt Garrett, and that's it. So thank you guys so much for being my big-time patrons. You are the best. Without you, this podcast will die immediately. Gone without my top patrons. I love you guys. Thank you so much. Again, I guess I'll be off getting married. So I'll see you guys Monday. I've got a variety of episodes to choose from, several in the bank. So Monday it's going to be good. I'll tell you that much. But I'm not sure what we're doing. I've got something I might want to release that was really cool. That was, we'll see. So, you'll have to find out Monday, and, let's talk to you guys then. Have a good weekend.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.